Good morning, welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we are going to be focusing on Perek Yud Beis, the 12th Perek of Sefer Melachim Beis. The topic of today is Yehoash's rule and his relationship to the Beis HaMikdash and the Kohanim. So, let's reclaim our territory. Yehoash is now 7 years old. He is the last surviving member of this family. His mother had killed, or his Ataliyahu, he had killed, his grandmother had killed everybody. He survived by being hidden in some of the rooms in the Beis HaMikdash, and he's now been through the rebellion led by Yehoyada HaKohen. He is now the king at the ripe age of 7 years old. And it tells us that he actually has, if you're to just read this perek without comparing it to Divrei Hayamim, it sounds very positive in general. He rules for 40 years, and he does everything which is yashar in the eyes of Hashem. He does what is correct and what is right in the eyes of Hashem. Like Yehoyada taught him, and the only thing that he doesn't do is he doesn't remove the bamos. The bamos, again, are these altars, which are for Hashem, but in people's personal backyards. So that means to say that that's the one thing which the Tanakh discredits him with up till this point. And what happens is he decides he wants to resurrect the Beis HaMikdash. He wants to beef up the Berek Habayis funds. The Berek Habayis, of course, are the funds which are used to strengthen and to replenish the Beis HaMikdash. So what does he do? He makes a deal. He turns to the Kohanim and he says, anytime that you get Kesef, what I'm going to do is like this. I'm going to allow people to pay you their money, which should go to the Berek Habayis. It'll go to you. And you will be in charge of making sure the Beis HaMikdash's upkeep is going to be up to date. Which means ultimately he's saying, I'm making you shareholders in this process. And I'm going to allow you to take the responsibility to make sure the Beis HaMikdash is up to date, rather than being a separate fund. And he believes that perhaps he's including them in the process, and perhaps because they have a relationship with the people coming to donate, they'll be able to collect more. Whatever his logic is, nonetheless, it turns out that the Kohanim are not Mechazek Berek HaBayis. They don't actually beef up the Beis HaMikdash. A few months later, evidently he comes there and the Beis HaMikdash is still looking dilapidated or a few months behind when it comes to light bulbs and floor cleaning. So he turns to them and he says, what's going on? And they don't answer. So he says, I'm going to suggest a second proposal. Proposal number two is that I would like to set up a box, which is going to be like a stocker box, which is placed next to the Mizbeach. When people come in, they'll place their Berek HaBayis funds there. It'll be counted directly by the king's counters, and there'll be the funds necessary for the Beis HaMikdash. And the Kohanim like this, and that's how they set it up. They set it up as a separate fund. They are not involved in the process itself. There's certain things which are excluded, certain gold and silver vessels which are excluded from this particular Berek HaBayis fund, and this is what it's going to be used for. So it sounds like a very good thing, and then Divrei Hayamim elaborates how successful this was. Just understanding the basic backwards and forwards in the conversation over here before even going further. The Radak points out that the way this goes is that beforehand, for whatever reason, it could have been that the Kohanim were waiting to gather a large enough fund in order to actually use it for the Beis HaMikdash, and they hadn't yet garnered that from their donations, from their personal donations, and the king suspected them that they were actually pocketing it, and they disliked that. They were upset that the king was suspecting them incorrectly of the mismanagement of embezzling the temple funds, which is why they preferred the disengaged method, proposal number two, where the funds had nothing to do with them all the way through. This already over here, just as a personal comment, is ominous in the sense that there is a distrust created between king and priest. Hold that thought for a moment. End of the perek concludes the following, is that Hazael, remember this is, he's the king anointed by Elisha in the north, in Assyria, starts encroaching, and he conquers Gat. Gat is pretty far south. So, Hazael, Assyria, is really encroaching deeply into the territory. And he actually turns his face to Jerusalem. So, that means he's about to conquer Jerusalem. What does Yehoash do? He turns to the funds of the coffers of the king, of his father, Yehoram and Ahaziahu. And he turns and he empties them to send them a gift to Hazael. And in fact, Hazael goes away because of this bribe. And he was able to push them off. At the end of his life, unfortunately, Yehoash does not reach a peaceful ending. There's a rebellion of two of his servants, who are Yozavad ben Shimas and Yehozaved ben Shomer, rebel against him and kill him, and he is buried in his ancestral graveyard. And his son Amatzia, we're going to meet him later, takes his place. So a few things just to think about in this perek, 3 points to ponder. Point number one is, we never actually thought about this yesterday, but why is it that that Jehoiada waited 7 years to make this young man into a king? Why did it take 7 years? Why not more? Why not less? So the Chiddush points out two possibilities. One could be a practical possibility, and that is that the rooms were never really refreshed. The rooms around the Kodesh Kodashim were never refreshed or looked at. They were only every 7 years. So it would be 7 years before, you know, the building crew would come in and realize that there's somebody hiding here, and then the Merubah would get out, which is why that was the longest amount of time that he was able to hide him. The other option as is pointed out in Halacha, is that at the age of around 7, the child enters into a new stage of chinuch. A child is able to perceive, understand certain things in many societies. That's around first grade time. And so the child has perhaps more qualities of being able to make decisions. Again, still very, very young, but nonetheless, that's why he waited that long. Just understanding this particular episode over here, it does sound a little strange to us. What's going on over here? Why was he rebelled against at the end of his life? What was really happening here? So in order to really appreciate our perek, we actually need to go to Derei Yoyamim Beis, where this story is recorded a second time with much more detail. In that particular episode, it claims that Jehoiada was, as is hinted in the Psukim in this perek, take a look inside and see where, it sounds like Yoash is only a good king as long as Jehoiada, his sponsoring Kohen, was around. When Jehoiada grew old and died, then it says that people started bowing to him, and he took it to heart, and he became, in a certain sense, maybe he deified himself. He thought that he was much better than he really was, and it says that he no longer listened to the Zakenim. In fact, at this point in time, when this element of sin started creeping into society, the son of Jehoiada was a man by the name of Zechariah. Zechariah was a Kohen, and he had this spiritual revelation, and he turns to all the people in the Beis Hamikdash, and he says, "Lama atem avrim es mitzvos Hashem v'lo tatzlichu, ki azaltem es Hashem v'yazov eschem." You're leaving Hashem. How could you be doing this? And people didn't like to hear those words. You know what happened? In the Beis Hamikdash, as the Midrash says, on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur, when he was giving this drasha, this fire and brimstone drasha about becoming better, they didn't like that. And with the condoning action of the king of Yoash, they stoned him to death in the courtyard itself. Can you imagine that? In the courtyard itself. The Midrash goes on to say, actually in terrifying detail, that later on when Nevuzadron, we're going to meet him later on, one of the Saratabachim, one of the generals of the Babylonians around in the Beis Hamikdash, he saw that the blood of Zechariah was still boiling on the floor, miraculously boiling on the floor of the Beis Hamikdash. And he turned to them and he said, "What's going on over here?" And they didn't say anything. So he said, "If you don't tell me, I'll rake your skin off." And they said it was animal blood. So he shefted a whole bunch of animals and the blood still carried on boiling. He says, "No, something else is going on over here." And they told him what happened. And so what he did was he shechted the Sanhedrin Gedola. He killed all the 70 Zakenim on that spot to atone the blood which was boiling, and it started carrying on boiling. He destroyed, then he killed the Sanhedrin Katana, some of the smaller satellite based dens, and the blood carried on boiling. Then he took the Pirchei Kohanim, the young Kohanim, he slaughtered them all on the spot, and the blood carried on boiling. And finally, Zechariah in heaven says, "Akash Baruch Hu, how much more will you do to atone for my blood?" And the blood stopped boiling. Can you imagine? So terrifying, terrifying retribution, which has been called out from the bloods of Zechariah because of this terrible moment, which was condoned by Yoash. And if you think about it, here is the most terrible moment in the sense of the lack of appreciation. Zechariah's father was the one who gave Yoash his power. The Kohanim were the ones who, in fact, established him as a king and protected him when he was being anointed king, dividing into those three groups. But nonetheless, what does he do? He allows the Kohanim to be killed in the Beis Hamikdash on Yom Kippur in their service. What a terrifying thing. In fact, today, if you go to Har HaZeisim, there's two huge structures at the bottom of Har HaZeisim. One is what's called Yad Avshalom, and the other one right next to it with a triangular roof is called Yad Zechariah. That's not Zechariah HaNavi, who lives much later. This is Zechariah HaKohen, referring to this Zechariah who was killed. I'll try to send out a picture in the WhatsApp group just to get a sense of what this looks like. Says the Ralbag, the reason why Yoash was killed, why was he rebelled against, was in fact the people who were seeking retribution for Zechariah's death. the circle of the spiral revenge has opened, and that's ultimately his downfall, allowing such a terrible action to occur. Anyway, this ends on a darker note, but hopefully we'll be moving into better places soon. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.